the All Things XR podcast. Where you can get the best AR/VR analyzers from the biggest names in the field. Hi everyone, welcome to the All Things XR podcast. I'm Mojtaba. In today's episode, we talk about AR and VR in enterprise market with Christine Perret, member of AR for Enterprise. Hi, Christine.
Hi, thanks for inviting me to talk with you. I'm very pleased, and this is a topic that I'm very, very concerned with and been passionate about for a long time. The topic is the enterprise, and sometimes I say industrial augmented reality. I almost never say AR and VR, and I very, very rarely, I think I would have to be sleeping or somehow not in control of my speech if I said XR. The focus of my work is entirely on augmented reality. I realize that there are other combinations of the physical world and the digital world, or lots of different permutations, we'll say, and flavors. But my focus is entirely on the augmented reality.
Mm-hmm. Great. Can you tell us, Christine, about a little more about yourself and your organizations and companies?
Yep. So I'm an independent consultant. I'm not a consultant who's out of work and happens to be doing consulting on the side. This is what I've been doing now for almost 30 years. And I always have focused on an emerging technology, and I focus more specifically on emerging technology before it starts to hit the trough of disillusionment. At least that was my history. I started in just very, very simple digital media to desktop computers. Then a few years later, in the mid-90s, I focused on video conferencing. That took me until the early 2000s. Lots of different avenues, and some of them were dead-end streets, and some of them were very fruitful, both from a consulting standpoint and from the intellectual challenge that was posed by combining real-time data with stored information on a network at a distance. So those were the topics that I was focusing on. I was focusing on real-time media, dynamic data. That means that it's time-stamped over time. So dynamic data types. And when I moved to Europe in 2004, I really said, I'm leaving all that desktop and those big clunky computers behind and focus exclusively on mobile platforms. Well, 2004, it's hard to remember, but the mobile platforms we had then were very different than what we have today. A couple of years in, thinking about how one would use video on a clunky brick Nokia phone, I discovered augmented reality through some research groups that I was involved with and I'm still working with. So at that stage, it was really prototypes and people carrying backpacks around with what they called mobile computers. And there was no use of a mobile network at all. But over time, of course, that changed pretty rapidly. And in 2009, we could see the beginnings of an offer that may interest the consumer. So the first experiences were finding, for example, a metro station. If you were in London or in Madrid or somewhere else, you could use this augmented reality system to navigate. And then there was also, you spoke to the founder, or the CEO of Wikitude. There was a ability to see the entries from a Wikipedia article in anchored in geolocation. If that Wikipedia entry had a lat-long coordinate associated with it. So these looked very promising and interesting, but because of my experiences in video and video conferencing and real-time collaboration, I also had seen failure. You know, I really had seen things not be as fruitful as they could have been. And it concerned me that the people who were writing technology and preparing these new products, new opportunities, were focusing in technology silos. So I made it my mission to advocate, so to promote the idea of open and interoperable augmented reality. And I was by no means alone. There were several hundred, at some point, maybe 500 people who were thinking along these lines and working, even a subset of that, working towards interoperability. Some of them were in standards organizations, others in products and so forth. In the context of these journeys and these meetings and projects that we did together, I discovered that the experience delivered to consumers on those handheld devices were just below what people really wanted to use. They were frustrating, and they were not of a quality that they expected. You know, you'd see an asset, for example, placed in the wrong place because there was some error in the GPS or error in the compass, because you were standing next to a pool of water or a big piece of concrete or steel. There were many, many problems. And so people were getting disenchanted with the consumer. This is around 2009, 2010, early 2011. And it was around that time in 2011 that I found myself in a room that was filled to capacity with people from large enterprise, industrial people, the industry, automotive, of course, aviation, aerospace, construction, oil and gas, power. And I said, what are all these people doing here? This is amazing. They have something, and they have a problem to solve. Instead of a technology looking for a problem, these people had problems and they were looking for a technology. So it completely turned my thinking around, and I found some of those people, and we worked together to create the AR for Enterprise Alliance. Mm-hmm. And that's an industry organization that I served as the executive director for several years until the summer of 2016. I found my replacement. I'm very, very pleased to have found a replacement. He's still the same person. Mark Sage is the executive director today. And I'm simply a member of the area, and very much support and provide my time to the different initiatives of the AR for Enterprise Alliance. So the idea there was not to think about what problems does AR have, but what problems do people in enterprise encounter when they want to introduce AR? And that's really been my consulting gig for the last, 5 years or so. And this, it has many, many different dimensions.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, Christine, can you tell us more about the current state of enterprise AR right now?
Right. Well, compared to 5 years ago, or more. It's very, very advanced, and it's fantastic to see what people can do today. On the other hand, I don't have to tell you there's a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
The hardware has changed a great deal.
Yeah, sure.
The hardware that we have today will look very, very archaic and you know, kind of primitive in 1 or 2 years from now. So it's a constant evolution. People see the hardware and they think of that first. Sometimes we see, you know, people will get enchanted with the toys. They just want the toys. And this is unfortunate. But we can work around it. And, of course, all those hardware platforms need software. And they need content. Those are the three magic ingredients of all augmented reality, the hardware, software, and content. For enterprises, the current state of the content is still, it's one of our barriers. The content isn't being prepared automatically for use in an AR experience. So what that means is that there's an enormous learning curve and financial investment to put AR in place, because a part of it, a big part of it, is preparing the data, the right formats, the right scale, the right weight that they can perform on our current software and hardware. This content readiness is one of our current, you know, headaches. It's an opportunity, of course, and I'm starting to see new companies that focus on this content preparation to automate it in particular, because doing everything manually, it has two problems. It takes too long and it's too expensive, because we have insufficient professionals in this field. You know, we really do have a lack of trained professionals in enterprise augmented reality. I myself am not a coder. I can't write those algorithms. I can point you to people who do, but that's still very primitive as well. Now, some companies have realized this and have built some very nice businesses to make a data pipeline from the repositories in a learning management records or in a business management workflow, instructions delivery, technical communications. Those are extremely people in those departments are now very intimately related to enterprise AR. They're trying to learn everything they can and to support those kinds of deployments.
Mm-hmm. As you said right now, the current form factor of AR wearables is not ready for consumer market, but they are being used a lot in enterprise market. Can you tell us more about this, and how do you think are the current state and the future of wearables in enterprise market?
Mm-hmm. So today we can see the products dividing up into, at the very highest level, is it a monocular or is it a binocular, stereo or holographic? Mm-hmm. So is it binocular or monocular? And the monoculars, I think, are really improving quite a lot, and they are production ready, many of them. Not all. I know I've seen with my own eyes piles of parts from broken devices. They're not quite rugged enough for all the environments in which they need to be used. But these ones, whether they rest on the nose and the ears or whether they clip on to a helmet, these are very, very promising, very good. I think many people are satisfied with, they can make these work for them. As far as the binocular and stereo and holographic, I think that we have have seen several companies fail in late 2018 in that department, early 2019. So our choices are much reduced there. And it's a pity, my opinion, because what it means is that people are, they don't have as many choices. And, but what we're going to be able to use with the HoloLens 2 is certainly much superior in terms, in many ways, in terms of its ability to, detect the user's sentiment and gestures and motion, a very, very sophisticated device and state of the art. I think that I would be surprised if there's not going to be at least one or two other providers here. They may be using some HoloLens technology, or like Trimble, you've seen at Mobile World Congress. This is a company that works on technologies for mostly the construction and architecture engineering industry, but they have certainly other industries as well. They're taking some HoloLens technology and moving that forward in their offerings as part of their technological portfolio. So I think we will see multiple generations in sort of these directions. We're going to see some people who do monocular today continue to advance their binocular systems. The maturity of the Magic Lens, to be determined, but certainly going to improve given all of the capabilities and the people in those companies. It's very promising. It's very promising. It's not the biggest obstacle we have anymore.
We have to accept that, because the hardware business is so hard, and startups rarely can compete with big companies like Magic Leap or Microsoft. And we have to accept that, I think. So, Christine, what are the current use cases of AR in enterprise market?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are an infinite number of use cases. In my opinion, all industries have situations in which AR will add value to them. But before I get into specific use cases, I'm going to kind of talk in a roundabout way about the industries that are most likely to use AR.
Mm-hmm, sure.
They are, it's odd, but it's ironic, actually, that I think the industries that can benefit the most in the nearest future are old industries. They're mature industries. And by this, I mean, they may have companies have been consolidated. There's only two or three, and their bottom line or their financial figures, they can only tweak those in very small ways. They can't start making 50% revenues, or they're not going to double their profits. They are making small incremental changes to very large businesses in order to improve their bottom line. So small in a company that has 10,000 or 100,000 employees, a small change in the productivity of those employees is a big change in the profitability. So think of those, they are relatively old industries. They have a lot of employees and they have a lot of physical world assets. So the physical world assets includes those human beings and their knowledge, but also, miles of what we call linear assets. That means railroads and, pipes and all kinds of things that are around those very, very physical world assets. Fleets of cars, fleets of ships, airplanes, trains. These are the kinds of industries where changing the process from a manual one to a robot or automation is extremely slow. We're better off at this stage of the game improving the productivity and the performance of the human being rather than replacing them with robots. Mm-hmm. And that's what AR does. So first those industries. Then in terms of the use cases, there's a great deal of demonstrated benefit in everything that has to do with maintenance and operations. So keeping your physical world assets going in the best possible condition is a really fast ROI. If you can keep that factory, you know, factory line moving with very few or no interruptions, you are really showing an improvement in your financial performance. Maintenance, operations, and then there's a lot of people who show extremely good use cases in field services. So this is people who have left the office, they've left the manufacturing environment, and they are out in the physical world where there's a lot of variables. It's highly unpredictable what's out there. They don't know what they're going to find when they arrive at the pump or at a dam, or they're out in the ocean. So these services industries that get, the more remote it is, the harder it is to get experts out there, the more expensive and the longer the time factor to get your experts out there. So that really, really points to this telepresence, or being able to remote expert, to bring the remote expert to the location where somebody with untrained hands can follow the guidance of an expert. So there's a lot of very good use cases. And I'm just giving you the high level. We can get down into the details now. People are starting to provide these kinds of details, like I can repair a bottling machine. This is a Coca-Cola or, you know, a perfume or something. They can repair those machines in much, much, much faster. A reduction of, from days to hours or minutes. That translates to an extremely very compelling situation. So among all the use cases that we have, whether it's a remote expert or giving step-by-step instructions to someone who doesn't have that knowledge or that training, the ones that work the best are where you can control the conditions of the user. The less you control the user, the more likely the AR experience will fail or lose tracking. You know, you may not have internet connectivity. The more you control the conditions, you're indoor, you have control of the lighting and the connectivity, the temperature, many factors like that, the better the performance and the results.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. How does AR deliver value to companies? Are there any specific numbers on how it will optimize the progresses?
Mm-hmm. So the numbers, of course, depend on the use cases. I would say most of the use cases and the return on investment analyses that have been done show time savings. That is a mm-hmm. metric that you just really, you have very, very strong data. We can show a time savings. Depends on the task, right? But it's sometimes savings of 40%, 50%. Can you imagine being able to do the same task twice as fast in half the time? Yes. It's a very, 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 yeah. Sometimes it's 70%. It depends so much.
Especially in the scale of those companies, the results will be huge.
It's profound, yeah. The second category of benefits and of value is reducing errors. So you might have been able to perform this task in, a day or an hour, but with AR, reducing errors, you can reduce the need to redo a task, and that's measurable. And so we do see reduction in errors. And then the last value that you can measure is what we call risk management or risk reduction. So this is putting people out of harm's way because you've warned them about what's coming. It also is things like making sure that the part that you were going to put, the way you were going to turn the valve or the part that you were going to put in there is the correct part. So you're reducing errors and you're reducing risks at the same time. So these are the three metrics of value that enterprises can measure.
So, Christine, on convincing companies and introducing AR to them, how do enterprises begin experimenting with AR, and what are the phases of introduction once the benefits are clear?
Well, they first of all need some strong support from somebody who has a problem. It's really it's a problem driven technology. We need to have a problem to solve before you think of AR as the solution. In the second component is an executive or a champion, we say sometimes, in a company that will take some risks and make some investments. The next step is to compile, I call it a use cases catalog. It's basically a desk exercise. You sit at your computer, I don't care what tool you use, a database, spreadsheet, pen and paper, and you write down all the use cases and you start keeping track of the use cases and you start keeping track of who's complaining about what. Then shadow the workers that are doing those jobs. This is what's called shadowing, is you accompany them and you follow them and you watch them and you talk with them and you brainstorm about how they could do their jobs differently. So shadowing workers allows us to document the time it takes and the places, that the exact circumstances where they would like to have a technology solution. Then we develop sandbox or a laboratory with different kinds of targets and wearables and software. There's a long phase of experimentation, and a lot of people lose their way in that stage. You know, they get distracted. They have other priorities, things that are more urgent, and they're not able to finish the evaluations and really the development of solutions. So one way of helping that get over that deep trough is to create and invest in an internal community of practice. We call it a community of practice. These are people with lots of different roles, and they have some exposure. Either they are supplying technology or they want to be the users of the technology. And that internal community of practice can really help in the laboratory and help people. Also, you have to hire developers with 3D graphics skills and user experience skills. And with the community of practice and the developers, develop a strategic plan. It may not be the plan forever, but a plan that will take you through the next year, so you know how much money you need, and you have to keep this stakeholders engaged through this development of the strategic plan, and then, of course, executing on that plan.
So, Chris, in recent years, and especially after the introduction of AR kits, big companies like Microsoft, Google, Apple, Facebook are officially in the AR market and are investing heavily in this space. How do you think this new situation will impact this market, and especially the AR enterprise field?
Well, you mentioned some, but don't forget that there's a lot of Asian companies, Samsung, Huawei, Alibaba. Exactly. They're all making very big investments. So it's not just the Western and North American players. So it's a number of different ways. One aspect is if a company already has products from one of those suppliers, it gives them comfort to add on to their enterprise management tools by buying from a known supplier. So there's certainly a level of confidence that is increased because you're buying from a known supplier. I think that one of the things that people are realizing is it's not just about the hardware. It's also just the services, the service that you need to get from specialists or hosted services, you know, cloud services. These are increasingly accepted ways of doing business in enterprise, so that you start having a recurring cost instead of an out-of-pocket asset purchase. So you saw that recently. HoloLens is going to be available on a lease basis. You pay a small monthly fee, and you know, you always have the latest and greatest tool. So this is really changing the business model. That's one of the things that has happened in the enterprise, not just with AR, but across the board. You have people, instead of buying software kit and bringing it in-house, they are using services from third parties in the software as a service industry is extremely mature and dependable for enterprises. Those large enterprises still want to have the experts hold their hands in implementation, and they still want to bring many of those experts into their company. So they're hiring a lot, and we're seeing a shortage of skilled professionals, which I already mentioned.
As we mentioned, with big companies entering the AR space, how do you think startups can compete with these big players in enterprise AR space?
I think they have to focus. The small players and startups, they absolutely, the only way they can compete is to get into a niche, to find a specific opportunity, whether it's a problem that companies are having or a geography. Focusing on those geographies as language barriers, and large enterprises want to have somebody nearby they can call who will come right away and fix the problem. Those kinds of companies can charge a lot of money for those valuable services, but they can also become valuable partners to their customers and maybe be acquired by the enterprise in the future. So that's really the best way, in my opinion.
Exactly, I totally agree. So for our last question, looking a few years ahead, what do you see in the future of enterprise AR?
Well, enterprise AR can only go as fast as digital transformation or industry 4.0 adoption. So we are held back by companies that are not fully on the digital bandwagon. They haven't taken all the necessary steps to prepare their data or to have their management systems. They haven't taken all of the necessary steps with security, cybersecurity. And then we're going to see a lot more people. There's good opportunities for new businesses that are in safety, more specialized hardware for different tasks, for specialized use cases. I think that we're going to see more of that. We're going to have better incentives for workers to change how they do their tasks. They are going to have to accept that they are more replaceable, but more flexible, that they have jobs that are not predictable from the morning to the evening. So those are some of the trends. There's going to be growth in the number of use cases you hear about. It's going to be more difficult to manage the executive expectations because they're going to hear about this from their colleagues when they go to executive symposia and things. And they're going to say, hey, why am I not doing this? I hear such great things from my competitors. What are you doing in my company that will introduce augmented reality? And the reality of it is, it's not just AR. It's the whole pipeline around the hardware, software, and content, those three legs of the stool. If you don't have the good hardware, software, and content, you can't be successful. And I think some large companies just want to take that risk out of the hands of the third parties, and they're developing in-house solutions, which then they have to maintain, and they're going to be it's going to be challenging going forward.
Great. So, Christine, thanks very much for joining the All Things XR podcast. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Anytime.